Hey everyone, this is Isaac from IlluminatiWatcher.com. You are listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. I'd like to first give a shout out to all of the Patreon supporters out there. And I also want to give a shout out to those leaving reviews on iTunes for the podcast. I've been reading them all. As well as the Amazon reviews for The Dark Path. I got a new one on there and it was an anonymous person. They left a pretty, detailed critique. They disagreed with my labeling the book my magnum opus. And, they said they read most of my other books, which I appreciate. So it seems like maybe they, expected it to be something different, perhaps. They said that if they felt like it was a lot of information that I may have covered before. And look, I get that because when I say it was my magnum opus, what I was trying to do was resynthesize everything I had learned over these past few years, and do a sort of better production of what the occult agenda is inside the entertainment industry. In this book, I went much deeper on the aliens than I have in the past. There's new perspectives I've got since I wrote my first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, because that was the original book that I thought was going to synthesize all the information, but like, little did I know, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about back then on the level I was with The Dark Path, that is. But I tried to basically provide the occult sources because I felt like The Dark Path was going to be the way of saying, look, if you don't even want to believe me or other conspiracy theorists, just go read the occult literature for yourself. They still give me 4 out of 5 stars, which I thought was pretty nice of them. So, whoever that was, thank you for the review. I do take even the negative criticisms. I welcomely open to all of them because I like to use that to try to improve the product so that, other people, because the idea is I want everyone to understand what it is that we see and believe and understand to be this sort of agenda of manipulation. So if I can be more clear about the information, then that only helps get the message out, because that's ultimately what this is all about, is waking the masses up and getting people to at least understand that there is something going on and that conspiracy-minded folks are not the insane archetype that we seem to be portrayed as. On today's show, we're going to talk about just a slew of topics and, entertainment. We're talking about Lana Del Rey, a little bit on Quincy Jones, the Olympics opening ceremony. I got a little bit on Jack Parsons, The Shape of Water, Wonder Woman, some information about earthing, grounding mats. If you know what that is, I'm going to talk about that, my experience with that. And I'm also going to talk about this Parkland shooting, which is a subject I don't necessarily want to get into, obviously. Nobody's a fan of this sort of thing, except for the mainstream media. When they say it bleeds, it leads, they are 100% correct, and they do not refrain from cashing in on it, right? But, it's a business. They got money to make. I get it. But I am going to talk about that because there were some recent revelations on that. And if you've seen my YouTube video or article on the Parkland shooting with David Bowie, you'll see the links there, as well as some, his recent talk about being possessed by demons. Yeah, so I'll talk about that towards the end. First, let's talk about Lana Del Rey. I'm a fan of Lana Del Rey. She has a newer album called Lust for Life. And on it, there's a track called Get Free. Now, it's very curious, because I've been listening and watching Lana Del Rey for years now, ever since her first album, and I've always seen these sort of occult connections in her work, which, again, I've got articles on all of them on IlluminatiWatcher.com, but she's given us sort of different references that make me believe she is familiar with this Illuminati agenda. We're talking about this concept that the Illuminati are the puppet masters and they control the artists and the messages and the music and all that. So I've seen that she's a little bit more aware of this sort of idea than most, right? So when her new album, Lust for Life, came out, she has a song called Get Free. It's the last song on the album. Now, Radiohead, you remember them? They had one good hit called Creep like 30 years ago. I don't really understand why people love Radiohead so much. Not my thing, but whatever. Anyways, they sued her because they claimed that the Get Free song on her album had the same chord progression and sound and feel as their song Creep, which is also ironic because they got sued for, and yeah, I don't have the name of the band that sued them. They got sued by someone earlier than them that claimed that they stole the, sound from a previous song. So now they're suing Lana Del Rey. And as of this recording, there's no resolution to it yet, but if Radiohead does win, then it's possible that all copies of this song will be removed from the records. Now, she's on a concert tour right now, and she told her fans in Denver how important this song was to her, which obviously tells you it has a much deeper meaning, right? It was the last song on the album as well. Oh, and by the way, if my voice sounds kind of like nasally or weird, I'm still dealing with this tonsillectomy situation. I went back to the doctor and told him I can't pronounce certain words. And it's driving me insane. But he said it's going to take weeks possibly for my mouth to kind of get back together here because there's like scar tissue back there. So if this is the first time listening to this show, you know, this isn't what I normally sound like, but you know, whatever. Anyways, so Lana Del Rey at this concert in Denver, she said the song had a deeper meaning. She said, "I just want to let you know that regardless of what happens in court, the sentiment that I wrote in that particular song, which was my statement song for the record, my personal manifesto, my modern manifesto, I just want to let you know that regardless if it gets taken down off of everything, those sentiments that I wrote and that I really am still going to strive for them, even if that song is not on the future physical releases of the record." So there she is. She's talking about her personal manifesto. So what is this manifesto? We got to look at the song, right? If you know, I dug around, and if you go on BBC, they did an interview that talks about this song and the controversy before it was even released. And on the BBC article, it says, "Other songs on the album had a more troubled gestation. Del Rey says the closing track, Get Free, originally had a different title and much more personal lyrics. That song started out really revealing, she says. I wanted to summarize my whole experience over the last 6 years, and then I realized I don't want to reveal everything. Once the initial version was out of my system, she says the recording was deleted completely, then started from scratch." Now, this initial version she speaks of was actually called Malibu, and, you know, like she said, the lyrics were too revealing. She said, "I think it would have been hard for me to do interviews if I'd said a couple of particular things that I was thinking of." You know, and she's referring to the original, Malibu, the original predecessor to Get Free. And then she references, she says, kind of the way Ultraviolence did. It was harder to promote that record. She's talking about her previous record, Ultraviolence, which was interesting because that album also was sort of veiled in esoteric mystery. She told she did an interview with Grazia, and in it she revealed this idea that she was part of this sort of cult. She said, "I used to be a member of an underground sect which was reigned by a guru. He surrounded himself with young girls, and he had this insane charisma I couldn't resist as well. So I was in this, I'll call it sect, because I was longing for love and security." Now, this idea that she was a member of a cult was even more further perpetuated in her video for the song called Freak. This was released about 3 years ago, 2015, in which she showed her and Father Misty, he's another singer, I think he's like a folksy kind of, you know, millennial type college folk rock singer. Anyways, he shows Father Misty in a cult similar to the Jonestown one, and they're drinking the Kool-Aid. And mind you, the Jonestown cult actually drank Flavor-Aid. A lot of people get that wrong for some reason. I guess it's like kind of like Kleenex and tissues. It's people say Kleenex and they're referencing tissues. Same thing. It was actually just Flavor-Aid. So it's curious how she chose this name of Ultraviolence for that record, because Ultraviolence, if you recall, was one of the things from Clockwork Orange that Alex was into. He called it a bit of the old Ultraviolence. And that is a tale by Kubrick. And in it, they talk about this government mind control. And, you know, I wrote in the Kubrick's Code project, there's a whole slew of connections that we had with the Clockwork Orange. But anyways, so we don't know the original lyrics to this Malibu predecessor to Get Free, but we could take a look at the final version, which apparently is a sort of cleaned up, you know, recreation. So if you look at the official lyrics, and mind you, you know, I'm gonna put this out there. She actually uses some fairly abstract lyrics in most of her music, but I'll provide the lyrics here, and then I'll tell you what I think they could symbolize. Okay, in verse one, she says, "Finally, I'm crossing the threshold from the ordinary world to the reveal of my heart." Now, when she says the terms crossing the threshold and leaving the ordinary world, that's quite interesting, because if you read my book, The Star Wars Conspiracy, you'll know that Joseph Campbell comes up oftentimes in this sort of idea of sort of metaphysical archetypal energies. And, you know, the steps required in this journey of the hero, you know, that's sort of his idea that you see echoed in Star Wars, in most movies, by the way. But step one is for the main character, the hero, to leave the ordinary world. And then step five, further down, is crossing the first threshold. So when she says she's crossing the threshold from the ordinary world, you know, she's actually referencing Joseph Campbell's ideas. And this was all in the book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And all of this leads to the status of a deity, if one were to follow this hero's journey. It leads to the apotheosis. And this concept of the self-deification and becoming a god is the crux of all of the Illuminati goals in the final endgame. Now, as one more caveat to this, you know, I actually did an analysis on Lana Del Rey. This is a few days ago. I just haven't published it yet, but you know, I was prepping it for this show, and then today on, I think it was Twitter, or no, her Instagram, she published an image of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, and then she tagged it with talking about leaving the ordinary world, or crossing the threshold, you know? And I shared that on my Twitter. You know, I'm on Twitter, at Illuminati Eyes, and I shared that image because I found that very interesting, because that's exactly what I was saying that, you know, the lyrics were about. I mean, it's very clear once you know what they're talking about, but you ask most people who Joseph Campbell is, they have no idea, you know. So it's all about, they're taking occult ideas and putting them out in the masses. Okay, so we move on, and in that verse she says, "Undoubtedly that will for certain take the dead out of the sea and the darkness from the arts." And again, we speak of the occult, we're referencing the dark arts. This is the idea of duality playing out in different concepts of exploring good and evil, reaching into the forbidden zones of knowledge, which, you know, in Kabbalism, you could reference it as the dark side to the Tree of Life, where the Klipoth, or demons, reside. So next we get into the next part. She says, "This is my commitment, my modern manifesto," right? She already told us in her audience that this was her manifesto. And she says, "I'm doing it for all of us who never got the chance, for Amy and for Whitney and all my birds of paradise who never got to fly at night because they were caught up in the dance." Now, here's another controversy, because if you listen to the album version, you don't hear "for Amy and for Whitney." You just hear, they blank those names out. You hear "for and for blank," right? So how do I know for sure that's what she says? Because if you research online, some of the lyrics websites actually tell you it says "for Amy and for Whitney." Other ones say nothing at all. It's just blank, which is how you hear it on the official version. So I dug through tons and tons of YouTube versions of this song. Couldn't hear anything. It's all blanked out. But then there was a show she did in which she actually sang it and filled it in. So she does, in fact, say she's doing it for Amy and for Whitney. Now, this only further makes me think that this song has a deeper revelation to be made that ties into this Illuminati conspiracy of occultism in the entertainment industry, because she's definitely referencing Whitney Houston, who died in occult fashion in the bathtub, which if you're unfamiliar with that, there's this whole idea of the bathtub being of importance because it's a cleansing ritual and witchcraft. It's also this idea of before passing over into another dimension, typically with goddesses, you know, from what I can see, they talk about the passing over of the goddess. So Whitney Houston, who was the diva, you know, Whitney Houston was the one that kind of coined, you know, I don't think she coined the term, but they called her a diva. She was one of the first ones. That's not a term that's been around forever. You know, the term diva comes from Devayana, an Indian term for goddess. So they take the goddess and they kill her in the bathtub. Well, that's an exact ritual, right? Denotes the passing of the goddess, the diva, the Devayana. Now, if you were unsure that that was, you know, an occult ritual, look at her daughter. When Whitney Houston died on the night of the Grammys, her daughter, Bobby Christina, one night prior in the same hotel, found unconscious in a bathtub. Then you fast forward, you know, I don't know what it was, 3 years or whatever it is, after Whitney's death, Bobby Christina also dies in a bathtub. And what was even curious is that her friends said that she was terrified of the bathtub. So, like, they said, why would she even be in the bathtub? She was terrified because of what happened to her and what happened to her mother back on when her mother died. So, very curious things. And then also, you know, in the lyrics, she references Amy. She's talking about Amy Winehouse. She also died in a strange fashion. She died at the age of 27, putting her in the 27 Club. And this is the age that we see many of these artistic, creative minds passing away. Jim Morrison also died in a bathtub, by the way. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Kurt Cobain. They all died at the age of 27. And there's more, too. You can look at them online. So Amy Winehouse and Whitney Houston are referenced, and then they blank it out on the official version. Why is that? Why can't she say those names? Very odd. You know, and the next part, she says, sometimes it feels like I've got a war in my mind. I want to get off, but I keep riding the ride. I never really noticed that I had to decide to play someone's game or live my own life. And now I do. I want to move out of the black into the blue. So she's obviously talking about playing someone's game or living her own life. She's talking about the music industry and the handlers and the game she has to play, or living according to her desires. And, you know, to me, I read this as the infamous Faustian bargain that these artists need to sign in order to become famous. You know, Katy Perry talks about it. Bob Dylan talks about it. That Robert Johnson was the original blues guitarist that claimed it back in, you know, 1920 or whatever it was. He said that he actually signed the Faustian bargain with the devil for the ability to play guitar. And then there were other blues artists that confirmed that. They said Robert Johnson had no ability to play the guitar. Then after he went to these crossroads in Mississippi, all of a sudden he can. And then Robert Johnson himself actually talked about it. So then, you know, Lana Del Rey says she's moving out of the black and into the blue. We're going to look at that here in a second. But first, I'm going to get through the lyrics. She says, finally, gone is the burden of the Crowley way of being. That comes from energies combined. Like my part, I was not discerning. And you, as we found out, were not in your right mind. Now, if you look online and research this song, you'll find that some of the lyrics claim that she's saying the crowded way of being. But when you listen to the song, you can clearly, very clearly, hear her say the Crowley way of being. Now, to me, that's a big clue because, you know, obviously Crowley is this British occultist, more revered than any other occultist, because, in my opinion, he was the one that was able to be the most successful at channeling entities, the aliens, Lamb, that kind of thing. He, in fact, invented sex, drugs, and rock and roll because he was all about partaking of different drugs and sex magic rituals and using, you know, rock and roll, which is a Dionysian sort of way of making contact with the divine. All of those things are. If you look up the different antinomian expressions and explorations, you'll find that sex magic, drug usage, and rhythms and drumming and dancing, that sort of thing, all are ways to make contact with the divine. Not making it up, you know. People think this is like some kind of extreme right-wing Christian paranoia, but the truth is, it is found if you read through the literature. And look, I'm not saying let's not listen to music anymore, dance. This isn't freaking Footloose. I get that, you know, everything in moderation, but I'm just saying, when you take a step back and look at what the roots of the music industry are, what the roots of the entertainment industry is, how it's very persuasive and very controlling, and then on top of it, you hear what these artists are talking about, especially with this, you know, sexual abuse allegations, it becomes very clear that there's something going on. Now, in those lyrics, she says that there's a burden of combined energies. Now, to me, this sounds like the reconciliation of opposites. We find that in alchemy and principles of duality. And she says she wasn't discerning, which means that she couldn't discern between good and evil. Because when you get into this realm of occult thinking, there's no such thing as evil. Everything is good. Both good and quote-unquote evil are ways and potentials to become enlightened, to become God, the apotheosis. Now, it's very curious because the... I totally spaced it. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Okay, so yeah, the deists, the early founders of America, many of them were deists. And the deists believe that God was a perfect being and he would not make a mistake. He would not create evil. Hence, there's no such thing as evil. That is exactly what you see with the, you know, Freemason temples with the black and white checkered floors, with you know, these concepts of black and white and duality. You see that on the Boaz and Jachin pillars. You see the reconciliation of opposites with the Baphomet. All these ideas are saying there are two extremes, but you know, they're not necessarily what we say they are. They're all social constructs. Evil doesn't really exist. Now, you move on to the next chorus. She says, there's no more chasing rainbows and hoping for an end to them. Their arches are illusions, solid at first glance, but then you try to touch them. There's nothing to hold on to. The colors used to lure you in and put you in a trance. So again, you know, it's quite clear. She's talking about the illusion of fame and stardom. This idea of putting someone into a trance. They're luring the artist in and putting them through a sort of subtle version of mind control. It's, you know, the idea of mind control is again tied into A Clockwork Orange, her last album, Ultra Violence. See, it's all coming together. It's so clear, right? I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe I sound insane. Anyways. Okay, let's move on. So then the song finishes off. Sometimes it feels like I've got a war in my mind. I want to get off, but I keep riding the ride. I never really noticed that I had to decide to play someone's game or live my own life. And now I do. I want to move out of the black into the blue. Repeat, repeat, repeat. So she's telling you she's got these struggles in her mind, a literal war in her mind. And she realizes that this stardom is merely a ride that she can't get off. She's trying to move from the black and into the blue. So, she repeats this often in the song. So we need to explore what that means. When she says out of the black and into the blue, obviously, you know, this phrase is very similar to the one you hear from Neil Young in his song, Hey Hey My My, Into the Black. But what I find curious is that it's also in Stephen King's book For It. And the line in the book says, it was only later, replaying the scene in her mind again and again, that she began to believe it was the expression of a man who was methodically unplugging himself from reality one chord at a time. The face of a man who was heading out of the blue and into the black. So, you know, in the book, Stephen King's book, it's saying the man's going on this sort of esoteric journey, and he's methodically unplugging himself from reality. He's moving into the black. You know, in Stephen King's book, I've got a whole analysis on it. This is one of the darkest books. I think he was really in touch with something very powerful. But I don't want to get sidetracked on that. In fact, I think I have a whole podcast episode about Stephen King's It. Maybe 5 months ago I did? I don't know. Anyways, so let's look at this black and the blue talk. In terms of Aleister Crowley's religion Thelema, because again, she references Crowley in the lyrics of the song, in his religion Thelema, the magical adept is tasked with crossing the abyss. Now, they're talking about this hidden zone in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, Daoth, which ties us into Daoth Vader, Darth Vader. You know, because all these things are connected. They're all the same, you know, sort of teachings. But crossing the abyss requires this practitioner, the initiate, to destroy the ego and enter into the dark realm and become sort of consumed by the universe. And, you know, if you've ever read Crowley's works, they're very difficult to get through. It's very sort of, I mean, it's so steeped in veiled language. You know, so I don't profess to be an expert on Crowley at all. I have read a lot of his stuff. I know a good amount about him. But from my very limited understanding of Crowley's teachings, what I have been able to find is that he does divide his adepts, his initiates, into the white and black. The white adepts are successful in the full enlightenment, and, you know, the phrase for Thelema is love under will. Now, the black adepts, they go a completely different route. They restrict themselves to the point of going down to the most base frequency, which connects them into the Kabbalistic source known as God that emanated these Sephirot on the Tree of Life. So they're not they're not being consumed by the universe. They didn't destroy the ego. They went sort of in reverse, I guess, down to the base frequencies. You know, we're talking about base frequencies. We're talking about primal urges and that sort of thing, from what I can tell. Crowley also said in his book, The Vision and the Voice, he said that darkness of the soul is utter blackness. You know, and that's a summation of his view on the adepts that enter into this black brotherhood. That's what he called these, the black adepts, as the black brotherhood. And he sort of viewed it with disdain, from what I can tell. So, put it all together. If you look at these lyrics, you can see very, very clearly Lana Del Rey is referencing a darkness in entertainment. And she confirms this when she talks about Amy Winehouse and Whitney Houston, which was, you know, somehow censored from this song, which, you know, begs the question of why. Why can't she say their names? Anyway, so she specifically calls out Crowley as well. She talks about moving from the black and into the blue, indicating she's moving from the realm of darkness and back into her true self. These lyrics also tell me that these are all merely desires. And it's much easier for her to say this than to do this, because when it goes down to it, she signed the Faustian bargain, the deal with the devil for fame. And it's curious because Dave Chappelle talked about this in The Bird Revelation, which I've also got an article and video for. I talked about it in a previous episode. So you've got another artist here trying to say there's something going on, something dark that they can't fully reveal. And then there's censorship of it, too. Well, another dark turn this thing took was just a week ago, a man was allegedly attempting to kidnap Lana Del Rey at knife point in one of her concerts in Florida. She later would, you know, talk to her fans about this traumatic experience and the media, and they all said that she actually had a breakdown from this. Now, I'm going to float this idea out there. Could it be that this kidnapping was the Illuminati trying to keep her quiet? And of course, when I say the Illuminati, I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek. I put quotes around it because, you know, people get a little sensational about this kind of stuff with the Illuminati. it's just a phrase. It's a term for these sort of hidden controllers doing certain things that are hidden from the public view. I don't know what they call themselves. I don't know if they're called the Illuminati, but that's what we call it, right? So now another example of, you know, why I think this is possible is if you look at the supposed robbery of Kim Kardashian. This was about maybe 2 years ago. She was supposedly robbed. She had $10 million of jewelry on her with no bodyguard in the room with her. And she was in Paris, I think it was, in this hotel that like all these celebrities come and go. And they lead us to believe there was no surveillance cameras, no security. She's in this room with $10 million worth of jewelry with no security. And someone comes in and they tie her up and put her in the bathtub. Again, we're talking about the bathtub. And this was a threat, I believe. If you look at the symbolism behind this, this was some kind of threat against Kanye West. Because after that happened, after the robbery, Kanye West broke down at his concerts. And that's what started the whole idea that he went in to get more mind control at the hospital. I think it was down in Southern California. Anyways, again, that's a whole another rabbit hole to go down. But if you want to believe this kind of thing, you could see that there are possible threats happening, and the official story is a little different than from what really happens. Again, when we see the bathtub, you often wonder if that's not this same thing as the witchcraft idea or the passing of the goddess. And I think that's what maybe Kanye West was freaking out about. Because a lot of people pick on Kanye West. And I mean, he's an ass. The President Obama called him an asshole. So I don't disagree with that. But like, I think he's a talented dude. I think he actually has a pretty good understanding of what's going on in the world. If you listen to his supposed rants, which I have, the media called him rants and they said he's losing his mind. But if you look at it through a new lens, you'll see that he's actually onto something. Now, I don't know why he went and hung out with Donald Trump when Trump became president, but I don't know. It's a very odd stuff going on with Kanye West. But anyways, Lana Del Rey, she said this song Get Free is her personal manifesto, which she's quite literally telling you it holds a great amount of value. And many people are not even looking at the importance of what she's saying, and they're getting hung up in this lawsuit that Radiohead's putting her through and all these other distractions. And they're not talking about why they censored the names out of the song, Amy Winehouse and Whitney Houston. So to me, it seems like it's all kind of connected if you understand everything that's going on. Okay, moving on, because we've got a lot to talk about. I've got a lot of subjects here. And they might be little brief snippets of interesting info. Something I'm quite proud of, Jim Mars, the late Jim Mars, rest in peace. He died not too long ago. He's the one who did the JFK, I think it's called Crossfire documentary. You can see on Amazon. And like, the guy's renowned. Like, he's like one of the top A-lister conspiracy theorists of all time. His last book was called The Illuminati, The Secret Society That Hijacked the World. And in it, much to my shock and humbling amazement, he's got a chapter called Symbology, where he talks about symbolism and the power of symbols. And lo and behold, when I was reading it, he references me. He wrote, according to Isaac Weishaupt, bada bada ba, he talks about the symbol of the all-seeing eye. So that's a huge deal to me. Super honored to be in the late Jim Mars's book. My dad would be proud. He actually had a book. Where is it? It's called The Secrets of the Fourth Reich by Jim Mars. Hang on a second. Let me check. No, it's called The Rise of the Fourth Reich by Jim Mars. And my dad wasn't too into conspiracies, but he was definitely into Nazis and that whole strange thing that was happening back then. So I haven't read the book yet, but I inherited it when he passed away. So yeah, that's a big deal to me. That was really, really, humbling and very, proud moment. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So you can check that book out. It's on Amazon, of course. Another someone named Jewel shared with me the symbolism on the cover to the Honcho Jack album. Now, most of you who listen to music, if you don't listen to rap music, you probably don't know who that is. That's Travis Scott and Quavo from the Migos. Anyways, on the cover of the album, you see, I believe it's supposed to be Quavo, and his arms are pointing up and down, not quite exactly the same as the Baphomet, but very similar. And of course, when you look at the Baphomet image, that's, you know, the goat, the satanic goat. He's pointing up and down because it symbolizes as above, so below, is the concept of ritual magic. It's the idea that the magician can influence the cosmos, and the universe will realign itself and manifest it as reality, which we will talk about later on when we talk about this these different ideas in entertainment. But anyways, there's also a new film coming out about Quincy Jones, supposedly. And, you know, I talked about him a fair amount in my hip-hop conspiracy book, Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. He seems to have a very crucial role in, you know, connections to some of these late artists like Michael Jackson and even Tupac, because Tupac was dating his daughter, Kidada Jones, when he passed away. And Tupac infamously told Kidada, there was a conversation before he went to Vegas where he said he wanted to take his bulletproof vest because he felt like something bad was going to happen. But then at the last minute, he changed his mind because, you know, he said Vegas is too damn hot in the summer. So that'll be quite curious to see what comes about in this Quincy Jones film, because supposedly there's all this stuff about him that's controversial. And, you know, I'm going to preface this with some big allegedlies, but allegedly the claim is that he is involved with sex magic of the homosexual variety, which, you know, Crowley implemented as the higher degrees of initiation in the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis. Even further down the line, you could claim that he's involved with blood sacrifices. And he actually talked about, there's a quote I have in my book, he says, "I believe in astrology as much as I do in genetics." You know, just because you're into astrology doesn't make you a Illuminati blood sacrificer, but hey, it is smoke, and where there's smoke, sometimes there's fire. So, there's that to be considered. Let's talk about the Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. The opening ceremony happened, and I watched the whole thing. It was actually kind of short, relative to previous Olympics opening ceremonies. But they showed the phoenix multiple times, and the phoenix represents and symbolizes the rebirth and the rising from the ashes. Now, in terms of the occult, the phoenix is representative of the initiator candidate who's going through this transformative process of alchemy. Alchemy is represented as, you know, different colors and as different stages in the enlightenment process. The colors of, you know, black, white, yellow, and red also symbolizes birds, the crow, black, and the swan, white, pelican, yellow, and the phoenix as red. The final stage is the phoenix. You saw symbolism of this in the Hunger Games. You also saw it with Rihanna's anti-album video series. I've got a really good breakdown on my YouTube channel for Rihanna and the occult symbolism of her anti-video series that you really got to check out if you're unfamiliar with this concept. But the first stage of alchemy seems to be the one that the first and the last stage gets the most symbolism, it seems. And in the Olympics opening ceremony, we see the phoenix oftentimes, more than once. The first stage is the Negredo, the crow. Now, what was curious to me, and I've got an article on IlluminatiWatcher.com for this stuff. You could look at the images that I pulled from the opening ceremony. What was curious was there was a man that came out with an outfit that looked exactly like the one in the Holy Mountain. That is Alejandro Jodorowsky's film that is steeped in occult symbolism. If you've never seen Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain, you really got to check it out. It's mad weird. But there's a guy named The Alchemist in in the film, who looks exactly like this guy who comes out in the Olympics opening ceremony. Now, the job of the alchemist in Hodorowski's film is to train these candidates into the ways of the occult. And again, it's loaded down with symbolism. So to see this guy in the opening ceremony that looks just like him was quite curious. And then at one point, the people form an eight-pointed star, which again is called the Star of Ishtar or the Star of Semiramis, representing a goddess of worship back in the pagan cultures, which supposedly the, you know, this goddess worship, these pagan cultures went underground and became what is known as the Illuminati today. So when we see this eight-pointed star on things like the tarot card, that's one of the words I can't pronounce, fool or pool, or, you know, I just say it all weird, but you know what I'm saying. We see it in Eyes Wide Shut, multiple times in Eyes Wide Shut. Again, I have to reference Kubrick's code for that. Now, what was curious is towards the end, this presentation shows this these children utilizing magic. I mean, quite literally magic. They have a wand and they cast it into the universe, just like you see on the tarot card for the magician. And it initiates the sequence for the future of technology taking over. They're divining and they are actually manifesting reality through this. These children are channeling energy through the cosmos. And again, we're talking about the as above, so below ideas. And then they show us this square portal that opens up. And again, we're talking about this idea of, if you look at some of the Zechariah Sitchin's writings, the ancient alien theories, they talk about how in the past, technology is indistinguishable from magic, you know, at a certain level. So when they show us this stuff in the Olympics, you actually see a cyborg. Again, we're talking about the transhumanism. They're talking about augmenting humans with robotics, which will dull us to the idea of the extinction of the human race. We will implement these technologies, and in the end game, it will be the uploading of you know, the human soul into forms of digital consciousness. Now, the announcers, we're talking about how the Korean culture believes that all things are connected and come from the same singular source. Now, this is identical to the religion studied by Konstantin Soikoski, which is panpsychism. And Soikoski is important because he was the original OG of ancient alien theories. He influenced Wernher von Braun and Jack Parsons and all these other occultists that are trying to get man out into space to, you know, make contact with these aliens and all this craziness. So, you know, I don't know that the Korean culture, I don't know if they're panpsychics, but, you know, that's very similar to these New Age ideas of global consciousness and being connected is what they want. And how do you connect all souls together? With one digital matrix and the uploading of all souls into that. And then one more final thing on the Olympics. Jordan, I hope I'm saying that name correctly, on Patreon, let me know about this, I think it's an ice skater named Adam Rippon. And I'm probably butchering his name too. But he's a figure skater, sorry. He said, I guess they interviewed him and they asked him about how he got to where he's at. And he said that it takes some witchcraft to do it. I dug a little bit on him and I couldn't find any confirmation that he's, you know, Wiccan or anything like that. But it was very curious that he did say that. So, you know, big shout out to Jordan or Jordan for, you know, sharing that with me on Patreon. I appreciate it. Speaking of people that have reached out and shared some info with me, someone... And again, I'm sorry if I butcher your name. I think it's Unique, if I'm reading it correctly. Told me about this new Chainsmokers video called You Owe Me. And I watched it. I'm actually a fan of the Chainsmokers. And on it, I don't want to spoil the ending, but it ends in full-on vampirism and cannibalism, which again could be the desensitizing of the masses. we saw this with like Twilight and all these monster films where the monster is, you know, regarded as sexy or desirable, or you sympathize with the bad guy. It's like the dark hero programming. And that's just one more example. Another quick one on Comedy Central. They have a show called Drunk History, and they did an episode with Jack Parsons, and they actually talked a lot about his connections to the occult and his opening of the Agape Lodge, but he ran the Agape Lodge of the OTO for Crowley. And they talked a fair amount about it. It was actually pretty interesting how much they talked about it, but you know, they didn't go too deep on it, but they did talk about like the sex magic rituals and that sort of thing that was happening back then, and how curious it was that he was connected in with L. Ron Hubbard and NASA and all that stuff. I watched a film on Netflix called The Ritual. This is, you know, I didn't see it. It was a very interesting movie. If you're into horror movies, if you're into a lot of these ideas of the pagan stuff and the occult, it's worth a watch for sure. It's about these guys that go hiking through the woods of Sweden, and they come across this sort of pagan cult and their god that they worship. It's pretty creepy. It's pretty scary. Anyways, nothing else beyond it was an interesting film. I also saw The Shape of Water, which I've written about in the past here, about this idea of creating the moon child and this idea of creating a hybrid of a man with beast. And that is what this film is about. It's a love story about a woman who falls in love with this creature. He's not an alien per se, but they say they found him in the Amazonian like rivers or whatever. He was this water creature. It looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Anyways, in fact, in the movie, they do have sex. You know, I don't want to spoil everything for you because it's actually a really good movie. But there were a lot of, you know, the 666 hand. That comes up multiple times in the film. You'll see it on like a painting that I can't think of the guy's name. There's the guy, you know, the main character. She's a female and she's a mute, but she hangs out with this dude that lives in her apartment complex. If you watch the film, he's painting a Jell-O ad, and you'll see the 666 hand there, and you'll see it also when he's driving, not him, but the bad guy, the agent in the film, is driving a brand new Cadillac, and this guy kind of does that to him. It's the OK symbol. Sure, I get it. But it comes up many, many times in this film. If you watch it, look for it. It's very interesting. I tried to watch Wonder Woman. I thought it was incredibly boring. And not because I'm not from the camp of like, oh, if it's not a guy superhero, I'm not watching. Like, I don't like superhero movies to begin with. But everyone said Wonder Woman was so great, so I tried to watch it. I thought it was lame. I turned it off at about half hour. But I did notice that the queen character, I don't know what she was, she had the Star of Semiramis, the 8-pointed star on her crown or tiara or whatever. And, you know, obviously, again, we're talking about these pagan cultures and this 8-pointed star. The movie itself actually is very interesting because it started out at the very beginning. It's a camera and it pans over Paris, and then it zooms in on the Louvre, which has that giant glass pyramid in it, which if you look further into that, there's a as above, so below reference, because there's a pyramid above and then there's a inverted pyramid below. You could also read Dan Brown's Da Vinci Codes. I think they talk about it. But anyways, the narration while that's happening, while they zoom in on this pyramid, it's talking about mankind and dark forces being in control of the earth. So I found that very interesting. But again, I couldn't hang with the movie. I'll try to watch it again someday. But, I think these superhero movies are, I mean, they're kind of lame. They're kind of not creative enough to garner my interest. But they're not terrible. Like, I like Guardians of the Galaxy. That's pretty good. But they're all part of the agenda to push the superhuman. This is all tracing back to Helena Blavatsky, and it inspired all kinds of superheroes. Inspired Hitler too, by the way. Blavatsky did. But she was talking about this superhuman race. She called them different root races. And, you know, I might get into this on my next episode I'm going to get Michael Joseph on the show. He's great. He knows all this stuff by, he'll take it to a level you're not even ready for. I mean, he's very educated on these ideas of the root races and Blavatsky. So I might talk to him a little bit about that. Not sure yet. We'll see where the conversation goes. But anyways, it's all this idea of there's a more evolved form of human out there. And sure, I get it. Like, it's kind of just fun and dumb. And I read comic books as a kid. Like, I get it. Like, I kind of like this stuff too. But I think there's a bigger agenda to be had here. And speaking of agendas and superhero movies, Black Panther came out. And I thought it was curious because before it came out, I thought, man, they're really pushing this film. Like, it's going to be the best film ever. But, like, in the trailer, I was not that interested in it. But, you know, like I said, I'm not really interested in any superhero movies that much. But I noticed there was an abnormal amount of promotion for this thing, including, like, the main actor is on the cover of Time magazine. He's been on, like, every talk show. And I don't know that they do that with every superhero movie. Because it seems to me that they're trying to make this narrative that this movie is more than just a simple superhero movie. They're saying it's, an empowerment for, the African American culture, because I guess it's got like an all black cast or whatever, and right or wrong, I'm all for it, but, it was very curious because it seemed very obvious that they were going over the top with saying like, oh, this is the best movie ever. Everyone's going to love it. The reason I'm bringing this up is because not that I have a problem with it, but I think that things are formulating into this helter-skelter race war at a higher pace than before. I certainly hope that's not what's happening. But I want you to keep an eye open for this idea because they, now they're saying, and this will lead me into the next conversation here, that the Parkland shooter was a white supremacist. And then they claim Donald Trump has all these connections with the, white supremacist movement and all that stuff. It makes me curious as to what is going on here. I hope this Helter Skelter thing doesn't become reality, but Charles Manson was like a master, operating Thetan level Scientology, mental magician of sorts. And I'm curious if he wasn't projecting his ideas out into the universe for, the 80 years or whatever it was that he was in prison. Well, not 80 years. I guess it was like 50. Anyway, so, I'm not saying there's anything particularly wrong with Black Panther, but it adds one more piece to this puzzle that seems to be that they're pushing racial tensions a little bit. Could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But just something to keep an eye open for. Oh, and before I talk about the Parkland shooter, I watched this video on the grounding mats and earthing mats. I don't know if you've seen this before. There's a video that was going around, and it seemed like some new age hippie bullshit. Like, these guys are standing out in the grass and they're like, oh yeah, I stand outside and you get in touch with Mother Earth and you feel better and it does all these great side effects and reduces inflammation and all this stuff. And, they didn't really give you any science for it. They just were like, oh, yeah, there's all these studies that prove it's very helpful for inflammation and all this. Now, I didn't really believe it. But then I thought, well, let me look it up. And, because I see this kind of stuff, like the law of attraction and all these new age ideas. And, like, I think they've got some good ideas. And I think there's definitely power in positive thinking. But I was like, I don't know about this. So I looked it up. And sure enough, I found a legit study, not some lame study, because if you look up studies in journals and peer-reviewed journals, there are some phony ones out there, but this was like a legit one, and it was like a government study, and I know you're rolling your eyes, you're saying government study, but on it, they talk about how there were legitimate effects from different trials of people standing on mats that were grounded. And when I say grounded, they're talking about they plug it into the outlet of the house, the third pole there that goes to ground. So I read this study and it seemed very clear that it did have an effect. So I bought one on Amazon and, I'll be damned if it's not helping me sleep better. And maybe it's a placebo of some kind, but, they say that the power of the mind is very important. Placebo or not, you can, do the work to feel better. I don't suffer from a ton of inflammation, so I can't really speak on that, but it does seem to make me sleep better. And I'm definitely not saying like, oh yeah, go out and buy this mat and you'll feel like $1 million. But, to me, it seemed very interesting that it does seem to help me a little bit. So if you haven't heard of it, look into it, see what you think. Finally, let's talk about this maniac shooter in Parkland, Florida. And why not Florida, right? All the worst things happen down there. Just kidding. I lived there for about a year, and it was all right, man. It was cool. But I do notice a lot of bad things that happen down there often. But this shooter guy, I found it very curious because it happened. I saw it on the news and I thought, oh God, here we go again, And I'm not the kind that like, I'm not trying to hurry up and find some, trying to find some Illuminati link. I usually, like even when Sandy Hook happened, I would kind of like, I try to stay out of it because, it's kind of gross on some levels. Like, I don't want to write about this and sensationalize it, because to me, I think these are real people that are getting hurt by this kind of stuff. I'm not like that fucking idiot Alex Jones who thinks everything's fake and these people didn't, these are people that really died, And if I'm wrong, if there was just crisis actors, which I think that's way too elaborate of a plot. I don't think that they could pull that off. I don't think they could be coordinated enough to have this big fake event. It's possible, sure, I get it. It's not like we're not manipulated and deceived in a million ways all the time. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying this is where I draw my line because, there's two options here. Either A, Alex Jones and them people are right that this never happened and these are crisis actors and it's all a big plot to take the guns away. Or B, it really did happen, and now Alex Jones is out there talking about how people's kids did not die, and there's, families out there really suffering from this. And, like, if I'm wrong, I'll gladly be wrong, because I'm not trying to get that kind of karmic, balance of talking about, stuff like this when I think there really are victims out there for this kind of thing. But, whatever. To each his own. If you want to believe it, go ahead. You can believe in the flat earth thing, too. That's fine. I don't believe in that either. It's all good. I think keeping an open mind is where it matters. But let's talk about what I did see with this. Because I ended up writing an article on this. Because David Bowie, he had an album called The Next Day back in 2013. And on it, there's a track called Valentine's Day. And the message of this song is about a guy who goes to school on Valentine's Day and shoots it up. Now, obviously, that's exactly what happened in Parkland, Florida. It happened on February 14th. And, you look at the lyrics for Bowie's song. He says, Valentine told me who's to go. Feelings he treasured most of all. The teachers and the football stars. It's in his tiny face. It's in his scrawny hands. Valentine sold his soul. He's got something to say. And then it goes on, and it kind of repeats that. And then it says, it's happening today, Valentine, Valentine. But if you watch the video, because he did make a video for this song, you can see him definitely emulating that he's holding a gun, an assault rifle at that. And then you also see a shadow on the wall of, I don't know if it's an assault rifle or a Tommy gun or something, but it's of that same size. So now, why are we talking about this? Well, when I wrote my first book, I talked about this concept of predictive programming, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. It's the idea that entertainment can implant images or ideas into the mass consciousness, and then over time, it will play out as reality. You saw this with 9/11. There was tons and tons of 9/11 warnings, symbols, and ideas out there, and then it happened. And then 9/11, that's a whole odd story, conspiracy in itself. I think there was something super weird going on there. But anyways, but since I wrote that first book, I've studied the occult a lot more intensely. And again, we talk about ritual ceremonial magic and focusing and projecting one's will such that it can manifest a reality. Again, we talk about the New Age doctrines and the law of attraction and Helena Blavatsky and all that. So the predictive programming ideas to me, read just the same as the ritual of manifesting reality through magic. It's the as above, so below. And when the these magicians in entertainment can rearrange the cosmos and influence reality, perhaps you get things like this. You know, maybe inadvertently, Bowie created this ripple in space-time that manifested in reality. This was like the plot of Cloverfield Paradox. They manifested a reality of these demon creatures. And, you know, I like Bowie. He obviously didn't want that to happen, but, you know, maybe something like that did happen. There's a lot of weird things that happen in this world that we're not sure of. A lot of quantum entanglement. Now, if you look at where Bowie recorded this song, he recorded it in New York at a place called the Magic Shop. Again, very curious, since we're talking about ritual magic. And, you know, magic is the idea of conforming the universe to one's will, as Crowley said. And then Bowie, his last album, his album after this one that we're talking about, was called Black Star, also recorded at Magic Shop. And the Black Star is a reference to Saturn and has all these occult references that are obvious. If you want more on that specific Bowie, you can listen to my interview with Mark Devlin that I did. He knows a lot about, talks a lot about Bowie in his book, Musical Truth. So now, again, I don't know that Bowie caused this. Yeah, obviously, I don't think he would want this. But the main thing to take away from this is to consider the real powers of intention, mental emanations, law of attraction, and ritual magic. I believe that if one were to practice these things, it could have real effects, you know, good or bad. I'm not advocating to do that. I'm just saying that these ideas and talk of metaphysical sort of energies and Illuminati conspiracy theories should be considered more seriously by the masses. And they still don't understand. They still have no idea. They're so far behind. And again, that's why I try to like make my material very, very, you know, digestible for the folks that aren't awake yet. Because the media, they do a good job of discounting conspiracy theorists, especially since this fake news thing of the Donald Trump movement. But they want to make us think that the masses, that is, the occult and the Illuminati don't exist. But to me, it seems very real. And I think there's very powerful forces at work. And I question if they're what they... you know, what they want is what we want in the end. So, you know, this case will unfold as we learn more about this this nut job shooter. I'm sure there'll be more to it. In fact, today they said that, I think it was the New York Daily News, said that he said demons made him do it. The law enforcement said that they interviewed him and he talked about all these voices in his head, and they said that he called them demons. Again, you're talking about manifesting something into our world. Father Seraphim Rose talked about this sort of dark stew that we're in with entertainment and how it can have very real effects, negative effects, just like this. So to hear them use those words, you know, it tells me there's more to this sort of a spiritual battle going on right now. And I think people don't understand what's happening. And look, like, I'm a confused too. I'm trying to figure it out too. But to me, it seems like there is something happening and we need to figure out what it is instead of being distracted and, you know, being drawn towards the base frequency of entertainment. So, you know, that's the whole show this week. Like I said, next week, I'm going to have Michael Joseph on. It's going to be a great show. We're going to learn a lot from him. And, you know, if you like the show, again, leave a review on iTunes. I read them all. And if you're already on the Patreon team, thank you so much. I appreciate you more than I could ever tell you. If you're not, you can go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher and you can become a supporter. And if you go to the tier one and up, you'll get access to all of my bonus content on these podcasts, other stuff that I try to release. And, also you get a free copy of The Dark Path. And by the way, leave the reviews on Amazon. Like I said, I'll read the critical ones. Lay it on me, man. You know? Anyways, hope you guys have a good week. I will talk to you soon.